This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. This is episode 542 of the Wells Tech Podcast, recorded on March 27th, 2018. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two meet, and we're so happy that you joined us. When I say we, I've got a couple friends along today. First, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I am just peachy, Martin. Good to be joining you today.
And Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, or at least one of those two that we, I was going to use the word employ, but that's actually not quite correct.
Not quite.
We cajole and we guilt into coming on the show every other month. Jason, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Martin. We work for donuts, right?
Work for food, yes, anytime. Exactly. Jason, remind everybody what you do down there in Omaha, Nebraska.
So I'm the technology director for Bennington Public Schools and kind of do a lot of different things with teacher professional development, administration, and those kinds of aspects. And one of the things that I do a lot of is presentations, and I think that's kind of our focus for today's show, isn't it?
It is. Although I think you're trying to hijack the show with all that 3D printing you got going on in the background.
Yeah, sorry about that.
What are you making back there?
I have a couple of high school kids that are building a drone. So I've got to do four of these. They put this together in CAD. And now I've got to print out the frame, and then they're going to throw all the wiring and the servos and stuff like that on it. They're going to fly it through an obstacle course and hopefully win a grant from Google. So pretty excited about it.
That is awesome. If all goes well, it'll actually get off the ground. That is amazing.
That's the goal.
Good on you. Yeah, you're right, Jason. We were going to talk about presentations. This is our Back to the Basics month, the month of March, and this is the last Back to the Basics show of the month, and we've talked about things like email and file management and task management and calendaring, and one thing that almost everybody does in our biz, so to speak, if you certainly are a teacher, you do this a lot, and I think most people in their professional careers have some reason to have some kind of presentation, and usually that involves some kind of technology. Maybe Jason, I could ask you first, in educational circles, what's the thought on smart boards and the technology that sits in front of the classroom? Is that like yesterday's news? What are we doing in classrooms today?
Well, I can tell you, in our classrooms, we are not outfitting anybody with interactive whiteboards anymore. All of our students have devices. We have Chromebooks, we have laptops, they've got iPads. I mean, there are lots of different things that are available for them. They're more personal. And we find that when we have the interactive whiteboards in front of the classroom, they end up being more of a teacher tool than anything else. So, we've recognized that about the tool itself, and we've decided that, you know, if we're going to allocate resources in one direction or another, we want to make sure that they're being utilized in a good way. Right. So, you know, and we see the best uses of those, smart boards, or we use Mimio in our district. Mm-hmm. But we see that the best uses of those actually tend more towards the lower elementary grades. So once we start hitting about third, fourth grade, that's when our teachers say, I'd rather use the money that we would use for a Mimio in my classroom as I want Chromebooks instead. So that's kind of the tendency that we're seeing. And then also math teachers really seem to like them too. But that's more, a lot of our math teachers will use them for like lecture capture and things like that, not necessarily as a way to get students interacting with content and get them up out of their desks and working with the devices there. So that's been our experience anyways.
So you brought the smartness of the, you know, the board on the front right to the desk of the student, essentially.
Yeah, you know, you get a lot more, a lot of the research that we've done and resources that we've pulled together is, you know, the real benefit of those smart boards is when kids are actually interacting with the presentation and doing something with it. And, you know, for the $2,400 that it costs for a smart board, I can get 12 Chromebooks. So now I'm not 20 to 1. I'm 2 to 1. And that makes a big difference.
That's awesome. So your classrooms typically then just have a traditional projector and the student, the teacher is hooked up to projection and using that for their classroom resources they want to share.
Yeah. And then if there's anything that a student wants to show, or if a teacher wants a student to show something on their Chromebook, then we have, we enable Google Cast for Education, and students can cast their Chromebooks to the teacher, and then they'll show up on the projector.
Awesome. So the next question then is, do you have recommendations for your teachers in terms of what they're using to project or doing their presentations in? Do you have any standards in your school district, or people all over the place with that?
You know, we don't have anything that's a particular standard, or we say this is like, you know, there are some districts in our area that have their approved list of tools, right? We don't really have that from a teacher perspective. We do have certain things that we pay attention to for students just because of, you know, we want to make sure that we're maintaining compliance with regulations and things like that. But, you know, a lot of our teachers are going to use Google Slides. That's probably the most prevalent tool that we have in our district. But, you know, I'll see teachers using PowerPoint or any one of a number of online tools, too. We don't really mandate which ones they can or can't use. It's just kind of up to the creativity of the teacher.
Yeah, there are a lot of choices out there these days. And I think they go in and out of favor. I mean, I think a number of years ago, everybody said, well, this Prezi thing is really cool. I'm going to try that. And I think once the newness wears off and you recognize, hey, there's a lot of work to creating a presentation beyond just, you know, the barrier of learning the tool. Yeah, I think back to the basics is probably a good theme with presentations as well. Get the information in a pleasing manner, certainly on the screen, but you know, that's the end game, is to get that information in front of the kids. And I guess my encouragement would just be consistent. If you're hopping around presentation technologies, you're spending a lot of time not actually prepping the presentation, but learning the tool. So you've got Google Slides, you have PowerPoint, Keynote, mentioned Prezi. I've talked about Microsoft Sway tool, which I've used in the past. Canva, Adobe Spark, you mentioned in our pre-show, Jason, that could be used, PictoChart. Anything to say about any of those tools? And do they have specific niches that, let's say, Google Slides doesn't? Why would somebody go with some of those?
Yeah, some of these other tools are going to be much more graphically focused. So, you know, if you know, I mean, Google is very good at what they do, but a design company, they're not.
Right.
It's you can tell that it's run by engineers, because everything is very utilitarian, and you know, it just gets the job done, and which is great. But you know, a lot of teachers, and even for myself, I like to make things look nice, because that's a representation of me and the work that I do too. So you know, especially with something like a Canva or a PictoChart, they are meant to be graphic design kind of platforms. So they make the design process a whole lot easier. You got a lot more options with something like a Canva than you do with Google Slides. You know, I'm sure a lot of the audience has a lot of exposure to Google Slides and even PowerPoint to an extent too. You have your built-in templates kind of, and then you just kind of build stuff off of there. You know, where with Google Slides, you might have a dozen options. If you go into Canva, you've got literally millions of different resources that you can use. It makes that design a lot easier to do, as opposed to kind of just trying to come up with stuff on your own. Because believe it or not, I'm not a very creative person. So I rely on those tools a lot when I want to make something really pop or really look nice, you know, for a conference or something like that. Then I'll spend a little bit more time working on the design part of it, using one of those tools, and then, you know, just really make it pop, like I said.
The power of Google Slides is the cloud-based storage. I mean, you can do that potentially with all these tools and store in a lot of different ways, but integration with your other Google products and things like that. So you can do these kind of design things, Jason. I'm guessing this is probably what you do, just bring them into Slides. So use some of these other tools, but not necessarily use that as the host of your presentation or whatever.
Right. Yeah. So we call it app smashing. I don't know if that's made its, if that term has made its around. Yeah. So, you know, where you use multiple apps together and then combine the finished product into something that you, that, is kind of utilizes the strengths of one and incorporates the strengths of another in order to be able to accomplish something awesome. So, you know, yeah, like you mentioned, Google Slides is just a great platform for, you know, distributing content, sharing content. I like their presentation tools and things like that. But their design options are limited. So maybe I design a slide in Canva and then just use that maybe to create a background. And then I'll download that, apply that background to my master in Slides, and then now I've got that part of it. I can do the layout and build the rest of the presentation that way. So, you know, there's a lot of benefit in using a variety of tools. If you're only using Google Slides or if you're only using Prezi, then, you know, you've got a hammer. That means everything's a nail, but sometimes you run into a screw. So, you know, how are we gonna fix that? And we've got other tools out there that can kind of help us with that. You know, PictoChart's another one that does a great job of, it makes infographics super easy. Mm-hmm. And you can take in chart data and use that to generate an infographic. So, you know, create your infographic in PictoChart, and you can actually embed that right into a Google Slide. So if you've got dynamic data, it'll update everything. I mean, it's really slick the way that we can use some of these different tools.
Interesting.
Yeah, it reminds me, it's not a presentation thing, but I used PictoChart 1 year for the MLC Day website where I was trying to track how many scholarships had been funded. And that was just the best tool to go to have these little bodies changing colors and things like come up with a real creative chart that I then imported into the website and displayed. So yeah, I like that app smashing concept. That's pretty cool. What about images in general? Do you have some go-to choices that you recommend when people are looking for great imagery and training around that in your district? Or
yeah, you know, images is one of those things that I really harp on my teachers on about a lot. That was a really poorly constructed sentence. So I was even trying to figure out what I just said. Yeah, I really talk to my teachers a lot about copyright and making sure that they're respecting the ownership of the people who, and the intellectual property rights that people have that create this content, and then that they're using these things ethically and also effectively. So places to go is I always default to anything that has a Creative Commons or a public domain license, which just basically that's the copyright for the internet. So if you find that something is Creative Commons, generally speaking, you can use it as long as you attribute the author and link back to them. So you know, those are going to be really copyright friendly. Pixabay is an awesome website for finding super high quality stock photography. These are going to be public domain, so they call it Creative Commons Zero. So there's no attribution, no link back. You can use it for anything that you possibly want to, and there's no strings attached to it. I do suggest that's just a teacher use and not you send students there. There are some things that, you know, it falls under the category of fine art, I guess. You know, where there's some kind of explicit imagery that goes on there, but you know, if you're not seeking it, then it doesn't come up. So but that's something I always tell my teachers to go for stock photography. That's a great place to go. And then there's the Noun Project, is all Creative Commons free icons, and then Flat Icon is another website that I spent that I send teachers to a lot. And these are going to be full color vector images with, once again, an internet-friendly license attached to them. And I just happened to think just now, I got to remember what I think it's classroomimages.com, where you can send kids to the website, and they will, they'll find, no, that's not what it is. I'll find it and I'll send it to you in the show notes. you can, kids find an image and then they want to cite it, they want to use it, or they download it and it puts the citation right on the image. So that's another place to go for images that are copyright friendly. So those are really good places to go.
Nice. When we were talking about this in our pre-show planning, I remembered that a long time ago on Wells Tech, we had an idea of creating a YouTube playlist just to store things that people might want to use in various types of presentations, maybe certain teaching situations or our Bible classes or whatever it may be. So we're going to throw a link to our presentation and teaching videos YouTube playlist. You might want to peruse that, and you might find some gems there that would help you as you're putting together presentations for different purposes. Martin, what's your go-to secrets when you're presenting? You do a lot of presentations as well.
Yeah, there's a number of best practices, and my tool of choice is right now PowerPoint, although I'm probably comfortable in all of them. I find that one of the tips I usually give the classes that I teach and advice on presentation is, you know, pick that horse and get so comfortable with the tool that you don't have to think about it. If you have to fight to get that second screen up, or to know how to advance the slide, or to work with transitions or whatever, really that's going to detract from the flow of the presentation. So you really want to just get so comfortable with the tool that it kind of disappears. So that's suggestion number one. Jason already talked about the fair use of images, and I would say whenever you can use an image and make it as big as possible. You know, in presentations, bigger is always better, whether it's a big image or big text. The smaller the image, the smaller the text, the more difficult it is to actually make any kind of impact or even see from the back of the room. And that's a mistake I see in a lot of presentations, as they got way too many bullet points, way too many words. They use it kind of as a handout, when a handout would probably be a better tool itself than trying to portray all that on the screen and have your students furiously write everything down. So bigger is better. Few words, big letters, big images, you know, full edge to edge. That I think that's it's really not meant to be your crutch, your speaker notes. It's really supposed to augment or enhance what you're talking about. So those are a couple of the big ones. And then some basic public speaking things. Know your audience, of course. Understand what the setting is, and for you that are teachers, that's pretty simple because you have some control over your classroom. But if you're speaking in different venues or workshops, like I do, you never really know what the situation is going to be, which you're walking into, whether you need a VGA cable, HDMI cable, how good the resolution is going to be, if you're going to have audio, you know, even if everybody's going to be able to see the screen effectively. So I think those are all kind of things you have to account for and have plans B, C, and D as you go in, just to be as super prepared as possible. Have slides printed potentially if the technology goes awry. All those things are kind of things that you want to plan for and assume the worst and just kind of be prepared.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned a handout. We are all about technology here on Wells Tech, but I always come in with a sheet of paper to hand people when I'm doing a presentation. And one of the first things I do is include a link to the presentation in the cloud so that they know they can relax a little. They don't have to, you know,
curiously write everything you're saying. Yeah.
You know, that they'll have that for reference afterwards. And I think that kind of sets the stage for them to be a little more focused on what you're talking about than, you know, trying to get everything written down.
Yeah, conventional presentation best practices, at least what I read, and this will be one of my picks too, is that a presentation is a three-legged stool. There's three really important components. You have the slides themselves, but that's not it. Then you have the handout, and sometimes a handout in a classroom is already kind of encapsulated in a textbook or some kind of other materials. And then finally, your speaker notes. And if you know the subject super well, then maybe that's not as important. But I always do speaker notes regardless, because what that does is when I share the presentation, those speaker notes come along, and then the presentation itself doesn't have to incorporate everything that I wanted to communicate. I can put some of that in the speaker notes, and then they've got the full presentation. And when they look at it 6 months later, they can kind of get the flow of what was the dialogue around that slide. So those are kind of the big three that you need to pay attention to. So it's not just kind of putting a slide together and going. There's more to it than that. It's a present. It truly is an educational process, and it takes a lot of work to do it right.
I'm just thinking with those speaker notes, if we wanted to extend this, you could record a video as well using the presentation and have a video version maybe for sharing on social media or something like that.
PowerPoint allows that to happen. I don't know if Google Slides, does it have a way to record your presentation, Jason?
Hey, Martin, it requires app smashing.
Got it covered.
Right.
Can be done.
Have you done that? Do you do that? Record your presentations?
Yeah, I do. And I use a couple of different tools for it. I will use Screencastify. And if I'm on a Chromebook, I'll use that. I'm on my desktop, I really like Camtasia. It's a purchase of software, but it does a really good job. It's really easy to use, and that's my go-to when I'm on my desktop. So it just kind of depends on where I'm at. Another one that I've used recently, have you heard of Loom? Like, the platform that you use to weave.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it last time you were on the show, actually.
Oh, okay.
So good chance to mention it again, and we'll throw a link in the show notes.
What do you like about that, Jason?
Well, I like it because you have the embedded webcam, but and that's pretty standard feature in a lot of Chrome extensions that do screen recording, but with Loom, it's a circle, which is kind of nice, but you can move it. So it doesn't, it happens frequently where I'm demonstrating something on a UI or something like that, and it's in the video is always in the lower right-hand corner. Well, sometimes there's something down there that I want to bring attention to, and I can't move that box. So Loom kind of gets that video part of it out of the way, but still does a good job of adding that representation in there. And then there are other things that it'll do, like with Screencastify, you can't clip the ends of your recordings. What you get is what you get, and then it's all in there. So you get some limited editing features that are with Loom. And then you can also download as an MP4, not just a web, whatever the web standard is, which isn't a huge deal because any browser will play it, but I still prefer MP4 for a lot of different things. So a couple of reasons why I would go with Loom over some of these other tools.
Nice. So yeah, we've gone back to the basics and beyond because we've got some images to share. We've got some themes to share. We didn't mention Slides Carnival, but that's a great place to go to look for themes if you don't want to invent your own backgrounds or whatever. And we've got video to share as well. So all kinds of things around presentations.
Cool. Yep, great conversation. Back to the basics. We should probably move along in the show. And the next segment is, we call News in Tech. What's in the news?
Well, the good folks over at Acer must have known that Jason was going to be on the show today because they timed this announcement just right for us to break here on Wells Tech. The first Chrome OS tablet was announced yesterday. It's coming from Acer. Looks like it'll be available in May, and their announcement was just before today's announcement from Apple of a new iPad. So is this going to
potentially? What hasn't happened?
Potentially hasn't. Yeah, waiting on that one. But Jason, you think this is going to have an impact in classrooms? This Chrome OS tablet?
I'm not sure. One of the things that my teachers really like is the fact that the Chromebooks have a keyboard built in. And that was the big, that and price was the big differentiator between going with Chromebooks and going with iPads. And then there were a couple other things that went along with it. So I don't know. I'm intrigued by the idea. I like the fact that it's a Wacom stylus. So, you know, you can rest your palm on it. I think some of, you know, because one thing that our teachers really are looking at is the whole handwriting aspect and see how that part of it works. I don't know. The jury's out. I'm going to have to kick the tires for a little while and just try it out and see how it goes. And the other
part
of it is...
What's the price tag on that, Sally?
Yeah, I don't know if they announced the price.
It's $329.
Ooh, that's up
and
there.
It has the stylus that comes with it. Okay. So and that's list. So, you know, if you're in education and you're buying it in any kind of volume, I'm sure they cut the price a little bit. But the margins on Chrome tablets are not very high. So I'm curious to see how well it goes with the how well the adoption goes with these. Interested to see.
You got to start somewhere. I'm sure over time there'll be a whole plethora of Chrome tablets to choose from. But kudos to Acer for jumping in there and delivering one with a 9.7-inch screen, it says, 2048 by 1536 display, just like an iPad.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it goes.
All right, good. Let's move on to Wells now. Lots of registrations out there. Everything's happening.
It's going to be a busy summer, and some of them are for even for next summer, 2019. But yeah, now's the time to get registered if you're interested in the International Youth Rally happening at Bowling Green State University starting June 26th through the 29th. So we'll have links to all of these different registrations in the show notes. Another thing that's happening is the 55th Annual LWMS Convention in Green Bay, Wisconsin, June 21st to 24th. I guess you could go to LWMS and then head down to Ohio to Bowling Green for the youth rally. You can get them both in this summer because they the dates don't conflict, and we'll have a link to that registration information as well. Early bird ends April 1st, so you still got time this week to get on the early bird registration rate. Wells has announced that they will be doing, I believe, the fifth annual, I can't believe we've done this 5 years already, Wells Night at Miller Park. Always a lot of fun to come out to cheer on the team there. The Brewers are playing the Rockies on Friday, August 3rd, and you can be part of Wells Night. I think you can get a t-shirt in the process and all kinds of great options for seating. So check it out. And
best time there is pregame in the parking lot.
Tailgating, there you go. Lots of fun people to meet.
Yep.
And then finally, happening next summer, June 25th through 27th, at Wisconsin Dells Kalahari Resort is the Wells Education Technology and Leadership Summit. You two guys know a little bit about this event. Why don't you tell folks what they can get involved in now?
Jason, have you taught a session there?
Have I submitted a session for it?
No, in the past.
at the last time we did the Wells Tech Conference.
Wells Tech, right. Have you done anything for the Leadership Conference before?
You know what? Actually, yeah, I think I have done the Leadership Conference because we had Wells Tech, and then the Leadership Conference was like
a week later, right?
I remember I came back because I sandwiched a vacation in between there. So, right. I'm excited that the conferences are combined. I think that's a really good fit, and looking forward to a great experience. But yeah, I've been to both.
And we are looking for people willing to present at EdTech Lead 19 in any of those categories related to leadership, related to education, related to technology, of course. We have a form that you can fill out and submit your session ideas. Doesn't have to just be one. You can submit multiple ideas if you want. And our deadline is May 31st. So head over to Wells wellsedtechlead.com/call for presenters, and we'll have that link in the show notes.
Very nice. I think we're to our picks of the week. Jason, I'm intrigued by yours here. What do you got?
Yeah. So I have, it's called Meet Edison. It is a robot that is very low cost. So let me find my screen share here. Sorry, I've got like 18 different things on two huge monitors. So, the Edison robot is, can be built in with a, can get a Lego interface kind of. So it's got blocks on there. So you can add Lego parts onto it. But they're super cheap. If you get one just individually, it's $49. Or you can get multiples together. And if you get a class set, then they're as low as $30 a piece. So, you know, really super affordable. But the other cool thing about these, and this is something that I just recently discovered, is you can put multiple robots together to have them combine their forces. So, you know, if you want to build, you can build a tank and you can build a, you know, you can build a crane and you can do all of these other really cool things. And it kind of lowers the bar for some of that programming, kind of, you know, physical computing is what we call it. So, you know, getting, kids coding and, building robots that do something and, working through all of those, all of those different kinds of skills that go along with that. They've got great lessons that go along with it. You know, you can have various levels of difficulty. You want to do block based. You want to do I think it does Python. So you can do text based programming. Lots of really cool options with it. So I haven't personally used them yet, but there's a school district in our area that uses them a lot. So I'm planning a visit out there to kind of get more, gather more intel and see how that works out. So really cool. Excited about the possibilities for that.
So how do these normally work as far as operation? Some of them work with Bluetooth, or can you connect them to a smartphone, or do you have to simply download the program into the robot and it just kind of does its thing?
You know, with devices like these, usually have a combination of the two. There will be Bluetooth connectivity. You can use like an iPad or a phone or even a Chromebook sometimes to build your program and then send it over. But then they'll also generally have a USB interface, and okay, you just load, you do your program and then you download it and you send it over the wire to the device.
Cool. Yeah, I was checking this out in particular yesterday, and their promo video shows people using a remote control, like a television remote control. It'll interface with that, and kids were driving it with a TV remote control.
So even infrared some kind of connection. So, interesting.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yep. All right, Sally, you're up.
And my pick of the week is dedicated to Jason Schmidt, because I totally stole this from something he posted in the Wells Google Schools group.
He's the gift that keeps on giving, yes.
So if you guys aren't familiar with Wells Google Schools, I should have that as a pick of the week. But it's a Google Plus community where a whole bunch of people that are using Chromebooks and Google's suite for education, ask questions and answer questions. Always a great discussion over there, and I always pay attention when people are putting new ideas out there. One of the questions recently had to do with some failing hardware, and ultimately Jason, I believe, chimed in and said he uses a website called ChromebookParts.com to buy new screens and different things for the Chromebooks that he needs to repair in his district. And so I thought that was worth a mention on Wells Tech as a pick of the week, ChromebookParts.com. Looks like you can buy things for all different vendors and all different parts. I'm guessing screens are probably one of the major things that fail. Jason, video, big problem.
Yeah, one of the biggest thing that we replace are going to be screens. And then oddly enough, we also end up running into issues with like the headphone jacks in our,
right, I've heard that.
Yeah, so with the
imagine
latest
that.
Version.
They aren't super careful with their technology.
yeah, imagine that. I don't know. But Dell did something great with this last version of their Chromebooks that we have the Dell 3180s, I think, whatever it was last year. But they took that headphone jack, the board for it, and they made it a daughter board. So we don't have to replace a whole system board if that goes out.
Makes sense.
We can just replace that one little board, and it's like a $5 part or something like that. So that was a huge thing for us.
I'm sure headphones are used a lot as students are interacting or watching videos individually and stuff. So,
yep, a couple times a day.
Good thing. All right. Well, ChromebookParts.com seems like a good pick. And those of you that need it, go for it.
I got a question for you, Jason. This is something my wife complains about. We have Chromebooks in our grade school where she teaches, and she is constantly fighting the I lost my headphones syndrome from the students. Is there... because they're supposed to bring their own.
Okay.
How do you guys handle that? I'm assuming that the kids need headphones from time to time in the classroom. If they're missing or broken, do you have a cheap supply? Do you have a rental system? What's the approach that you guys take?
We are working on a solution to that right now, actually. the way that we handle it right now is teachers will just, it's on kids' supply list, and if they don't have a set, some of them will have earbuds that they just keep in the classroom, but those get really gross really quick.
Yeah, no kidding.
So what we're starting to do is we're starting to have like four or five in each of our classrooms just in case those kids forget. And we intentionally pick really, really robust, but really ugly headphones.
So it's kind of a penalty. It's like,
the cone of shame. Yeah. That's exactly it. So we get these gigantic Caliphone headphones. And you know, they're really great because, you know, you can wipe them down with rubbing alcohol, right, and, you know, right, sanitize them, and they're really ugly. So the kids don't want to steal them. So we're also starting to pair those with, it's a little cable, like two, 3 inches long, and you plug that into the device, and then it's got a male end and a female end. You plug the headphones into the female end. And then if they drop their Chromebook or they get up without thinking about it or anything like that, it disengages. And then we have fewer of those break
the $5 boards. Yeah.
Kind of a MagSafe for headphones. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like that. So that's the way that we're addressing the issue. Well, check with me in about a year, and I'll let you know if it's going
to
work.
I'm going to bring that up to my wife. I think she'd enjoy that. Yeah, here, you get to wear this all day. Good luck.
Yeah.
Here, let me take a picture, too. All right.
Look who forgot their headphones today.
Right. Put it on the website. Yeah.
Headphone shaming, not lunch shaming.
All right. We're up to my pick. And my pick is a shameless plug, although I'll plug Jason too here. But MLC is offering their summer courses, online courses. And I teach one every summer, or most every summer, called Dynamic Classroom Presentations. And it's a one-credit course. One difference this year is it's been expanded. They wanted all their courses to go at least 4 weeks. I had been doing this for 3 weeks. So we're going to do this for 4 weeks. June 4th through July 1st is the offering for this one, Dynamic Classroom Presentation. So I cover things like, you know, the basics, how to use presentation technology. But we spent a lot of our time about, you know, talking about some of the same things we did here, best practices, and how do you create visually appealing slides, and how do they relate to your presentation itself, and how to create speaker notes, and, you know, those kinds of things. And we do have a text that we use, and that's one of the best parts in my mind about the course. This is part of my pick too. I always have them read Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds, second edition now, Subtitled Simple Ideas on Presentation Design and Delivery. This is actually the best book I've ever read on presentation. It really kind of breaks it down into the basics and talks about that three-legged stool, you know, the slides, the speaker notes, and the handouts, and gives lots of, you know, beautiful examples in here as well. So it's a short read, and going to 4 weeks actually gives us a little bit of a breathing room to get through all the chapters. So we have a lot of fun. We have some lively discussions, and you come out of the course with at least one lesson fully baked. So you have some benefit out of that as well. And I just noticed in kind of working through, I think, Jason, you're doing something this year too, Google Technologies in Education graduate course, 3 credit, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. It's a course I developed a couple of years ago, and you know, I've been teaching it for 3 years now, I think.
So what do you go through in that course?
Basically everything Google. So, you know, you could come in with base knowledge zero, and my goal is to, by the time we're done with the class, it runs all summer, it's a 3 credit graduate class. But by the time you get done at the end of the summer, I would hope that you'd have enough skills to be able to pass both the level one and the level two Google certification exams. Awesome. So, you know, we get real anything Google, whether it's, you know, driver, docs, or slides, or anything like that. But then, you know, we'll dig in YouTube. We talk about Classroom quite a bit. You know, Hangouts, any of the parts of G Suite, we'll go through pretty in depth.
Cool.
Awesome.
If I had time, I'd love to take that myself. So, all right, we are to our ministry resources segment.
Yeah, and one thing we didn't talk about as we were doing the back to the basics with presentations was a popular kind of new addition to presentations, and that's being able to poll your audience as you're presenting using different polling tools that are available. I think Google Slides has one built in, but there are others out there as well, and you guys have experience with different ones. Is that right?
Yeah, this adds a really neat dimension to it if used in moderation. I've seen it overused, but most people bring smart devices, and certainly in the classroom, if you've got Chromebooks or whatever, this is definitely a good feedback mechanism or some kind of assessment to see, is everybody with me, you know, or do you have questions that we should be addressing? That's kind of how I use it too. One that I've used lately is called Straw Poll, and actually it's very simple to use. You just go to strawpoll.com, you type in the question, your poll options, different kinds of questions. You can allow comments or multiple options. So it's actually a very nice tool, very easy to use. You can expire the content if you want. And then what you get is a graph, basically, of all the answers that have been provided. So this is something you can do almost on the fly if you wanted, so right in the midst of your presentation. Or you can do it ahead of time as well. It can be private or public, or a private link at least, so it's hard to guess. And so you're not going to have people just kind of stumbling on it. And totally free to use. I've never found any freemium model here. It's not that they're trying to sell something else. I'm not sure how they're doing that. And you can also embed your poll into PowerPoints or other things as well. So that's what I use. Jason, how about you?
So I had kind of float back and forth between tools depending on what I'm trying to accomplish. So one tool that I use pretty frequently is called VoxVote. So here's an example of a question that I posed as part of a presentation that I did in a class I took last semester. And what I like about VoxVote is that it allows you to do like a free response kind of a question and generate a word cloud from it. So, you know, I asked the question, what is STEM? And I just had people write out a lengthy response to it. And this is all of the kind of that frequency chart with a word cloud of all of the responses that I got from people. But you're not just limited to those free responses. You know, you can do You can do like a yes or a no, or, you know, I had, I keep hearing that it is, was another option that people could have. And you get these charts that come out pretty, pretty slick, and it does it all in real time as you're doing these live polls. It's kind of clunky, you know, where your straw poll, that was a new one for me. Straw poll is a lot easier to use than VoxVote is. But you can, with an education account in VoxVote, they'll give you access to some more premium features, that you don't necessarily get with just the free version. So mm-hmm. it does have a free version of it, but you can also update to an education account. So I like VoxVote for those kinds of interactions. But the other one that I use pretty frequently is the presentation tools that are built in with Google Slides. So when we go in to present with a Google Slides. I don't know if this is going to come through.
Yep.
It's not. Are you seeing, you're seeing my presentation, but you're not seeing my speaker notes and stuff. So let me just switch my screen real quick. I think I should be able to get that on there. But the presenter view, the presenter view in Google Slides now allows you to do a Q&A. So I can have, I have my speaker notes that are built into the separate window, or with these audience tools, I can share this shortened URL, and this shows up as a banner on the top of all of my slides in my presentation. And then when somebody goes in and asks a question, let me just open this in a new tab and type in a question here. Here's a question. I can submit that question, and then it shows up in here, and then any other participants can see all of the questions that have been posted, and they can upvote it and say, you know, yeah, I have that question too, and you can kind of come back to them later on in the presentation. And then when you want to, you can click on this present button, and then it shows up in the presentation window. So that your audience can see the question and also who asked it. If you have you're signed in, you have an option to make it anonymous and things like that. So can be a really powerful engagement tool for working with your audience and kind of taking questions from them throughout that process.
Is this available through just the general Google Slides, or do you need a Google Apps account?
Nope, that's just built into Google Slides. Anybody can do it.
Okay. Nice. For free.
For free.
Free's good. Very good.
Very nice.
So that's our ministry resource. If you haven't tried these and you do presentations and want to kind of get a little bit of audience feedback, there are a lot of tools out there. We didn't mention Kahoot. That we've talked about that on the show in the past as well. So lots of different options. Cool. So that's going to about do it. Do we have a video of the week, Sally?
We do. We're going to be featuring Martin Luther College College Choir, directed by Adrian Smith, and their song In My Father's House. So it's kind of a little bit of an Easter treat for us. We're in Holy Week this week, and this will give you a little bit of a glimpse of heaven when you listen to the MLC choir singing.
They do an awesome job. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, Sally, we're going to do this again next week. And next week is a new month, so we'll have a new theme. And we're calling it Awesome Apps Month or something like that. And we're going to pick some. Each week, we're going to focus on a category of apps that we enjoy and we feel might have ministry application. And next week, we're going to talk about photo apps, camera apps, photo management apps, photo editing apps, everything photos, and those things that you have right there in your pocket, potentially. So tune in next week for the start of Awesome Apps Month. Jason, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you doing that.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's been a good time.
Have a blessed Easter to the both of you, and we will see everybody next week. Bye-bye.